go. Please don't go.
Intrigue. Danger. He walks alone through the jungles of intrigue. Around him hangs an air of mystery and the ominous threat of death. Unknown, accompanied only by truth and courage, moves Bob Barkley, undercover agent. Edward Kimball, head of the government intelligence, sat in his Washington office and listened closely as his distinguished-looking visitor talked. John Drake, president of the Allied News Syndicate, was reaching his climax.
And this man was decorated 6 times during the war. He went through it all, in Europe and the Pacific.
Well, that helps his rating, but what about his ability for what we want?
Kimball, he has everything you want. He's a fine writer, an expert on European and Far Eastern affairs. He knows people in the highest and lowest places. He's unmarried and under 40. He's in prime physical condition.
Can this man handle counterintelligence work in the Orient as well as in Europe?
Yes, I'm sure he can.
Does he realize that though he'll be working for this bureau, he can be given no protection or recognition by us?
Yes, he does. He'll be strictly on his own as far as the government is concerned. He'd be working as a correspondent for Allied News, and he'll make all his contacts with us. I might add, he realizes that he may be in constant danger of exposure and death.
Those words are synonymous in his case. You know, Mr. Drake, I've met a man who fits the pattern you've just described. He'd be right for this assignment if I had time to locate him. His name is Bob Barkley.
Why, that's my man.
What?
Bob Barkley is waiting in the outer office.
Say, that's great. Great.
Bob, it's good to see you. How are you?
Fine, Ed. Just fine. It's been a long time, Paul.
Come in here. I've been trying to locate you.
It would have taken a lot of doing. I've been hunting in Africa.
Well, no wonder I couldn't find you.
Barkley, I told Mr. Kimball you'd accept this job. You'll serve as an undercover agent while you're working for Allied News.
Right.
You know what'll be expected of you.
I do, Ed.
Can you leave immediately?
I've made reservations for Barkley on the midnight plane for San Francisco.
Ed, can I be briefed and cleared by your department by tonight?
Consider it done. I'm glad we have you on this assignment, Bob. I half expected Drake would suggest, well, Tyler Forrest.
Well, Forrest would have been my recommendation if Barkley hadn't accepted the proposition. As a matter of fact, I'd already discussed the assignment with him.
Well, Mr. Drake, I hope you didn't tell Forrest about the counterintelligence angle.
Oh, no. We never got to that point. As far as Tyler Forrest knows, this is a straight correspondence job that Bob is doing.
At that moment, Tyler Forrest, correspondent and news analyst, sat at a side table in a restaurant cafe in Washington. The man with him used the party name of Joseph.
Forrest, you're sure Barkley is here in Washington?
Positive, he's at the Willard. Drake is making a passport and other arrangements for him so he can fly to the coast tonight. The plane I should be taking.
Mm-hmm. I see. Forrest, the party banked on your getting the job. You know the international plans that have been made for the Orient in the months to come. We were depending on your news dispatches to put a smoke screen around them. Barkley won't do that.
He certainly won't. He'll expose them if he gets an idea of what we're up to. Barkley is too perceptive, too factual.
He's too American. Forrest, you're sure you'd get the assignment from Allied if Barkley weren't available?
It was practically promised to me. But Barkley returned from Africa. Yes, I would have had it.
Then you get the job now.
What are you talking about? Barkley leaves for San Francisco at midnight. And he'll sail from there in 3 days.
No, he won't, Forrest. No, he won't. When we're sure he's on the plane, we'll phone San Francisco. Amy will know what to do. A waiter, may we have more coffee, please?
Bob Barkley boarded the westbound plane at midnight. A moment later, a tall, smartly dressed, and darkly beautiful girl stepped into the cabin. She stopped and looked at the stewardess, and then at the available seats. She moved to an aisle seat next to Bob Barclay.
Is this seat taken?
No, it's not. Won't you sit down?
Thank you.
The girl said nothing during the next few minutes. Barclay, although aware of her warming nearness, removed an address book from his briefcase and began to thumb through it.
Will you all kindly fasten your seat belts, please?
Oh, yes, of course. Is your belt fastened, Mr. Barclay?
Yes, I always get it twisted.
Say, how did you know my name?
Well, aren't you the modest one? I've seen your picture above your news stories, of course, and in magazines. I recognized you the moment I saw it. Aren't you pleased?
I'm flattered. Really, I am. May I ask your name?
My name? It's Myra. Myra Thaxton. I'm on my way to Hong Kong eventually by way of Hawaii. My father's in the army and... I'm taking off. Do you mind if I close my eyes for a while? I always relax for the first hour or so of a flight.
During the flight to the West Coast, Bob Barclay did his best to become better acquainted with a girl named Myra, but found her somewhat evasive. She seemed friendly and cordial, but turned aside all further questions about her background or plans for the future. After several hours, Bob Barclay dozed.
Will you all kindly fasten your seatbelts? We'll be in San Francisco in 10 minutes.
Mr. Barclay, the lady speaking to you. Did you know you've been dozing for more than an hour?
Well, I did fall asleep, didn't I?
You certainly did. Talked a while, then read a while, and then slept.
I read? Oh, you mean my address book. I was just checking to be sure I had the information I'll need in the Orient. That book...
Will you please hold my purse while I rearrange myself?
Of course. But you're one girl who doesn't need rearranging.
Thank you.
I'll see you again, will I? I'm sailing for Hawaii, too. Friday on the President.
Really? Well, that's the boat I'm sailing on. Of course we'll be seeing each other.
All is right with the world.
Barclay and Myra Thaxton said farewell at the airport terminal building. He made arrangements for his luggage and then reached into his pocket for his address book. He recalled having placed it there before going to sleep on the plane. But now the book was gone. He returned to the plane and searched carefully on the floor around the seat he had occupied. There was no trace of the book.
What could have happened? No, it can't be. That girl? Why would she want it? It's your best opportunity, of course. Yeah, but then there were others on the plane. That fellow with the mustache who brushed against me when I got off. The stewardess. It might be important to a person who knew what the names and remarks meant.
Minutes later, Barclay, carrying his briefcase, hurried through the airport waiting room. Myra Thaxton was nowhere to be seen. As Barclay strode to the taxi stand, a man of nondescript appearance stepped from behind a pillar. He snatched a pistol from his pocket and ran after the reporter.
Taxi, sir?
Barclay walked toward the open cab door. And then the taxi driver saw the man running toward Barclay.
Watch out! That man behind you, he's got a gun! Watch out!
Barclay dropped to the ground flat, a second before the man fired.
Police! This way! Police!
A policeman ran through the panic-stricken crowd, waving his revolver. The bullets had struck above Barclay's head. Now the gunman turned to face the policeman. But the policeman shot first.
Gee, mister, you're lucky. The guy's dead. The cops got him.
Too bad he's dead. He might have answered questions.
Bob Barclay phoned the story to his office, visited station houses, the district attorney's office, and the local newspaper office. Then he went to his hotel. He'd been there about 15 minutes when there was a knock on the door.
Who's there?
Mr. Barclay, please.
Yes? What is it?
Mr. Barclay, I am Ah Ching. I may help you with your bags?
No, thank you. I sent most of them to the ship. It's only this two-suiter, and I've taken care of it.
Begging pardon, I at times stutter. So sorry I cannot help you. I would like to assist so great a man.
Thanks for the morale, Hypo. There's nothing to be done, really. Thank you just the same.
You are very welcome, Mr. Barker. Good day, sir.
Good day. This is something new. Everyone seems to know me.
The Chinese left the hotel and went to an apartment in the Parkside section. He made his report to two persons, a man addressed as Emil and a voluptuous redhead named Rita Dupre. Rita closed her eyes as the Chinese concluded his report.
So I did not attempt further conversation with Barclay. If his luggage has been sent to the board, we cannot expect to place an Infernal machine in it now.
I never did like the idea of a bomb. It's such a noisy way to get rid of a person, and so messy.
Ah Ching, you are an expert with a knife. How good are you at following a man?
Very good. I can be as quiet as the fog and as obscure as the night within a fog.
Then you will follow Barclay tonight. You must use discretion. Try to dispose of him away from the hotel. And above all, do not get caught.
Barclay visited the police once more and then dined alone on Fisherman's Wharf. It was nearly midnight when he left the restaurant. As he walked, the fog rolled in from the bay and poured around him like some creeping shroud. Slowly, he made his way along a street that had become a cloud with a floor to it. Then he heard other steps nearby. A voice called from the nothingness a few feet away.
Barclay. Bob Barclay.
Who are you? Who's calling me?
A figure, guided by the radar of Barclay's voice, was upon him.
You are here.
What is this?
Barclay could feel his assailant's arm raise high, and instinctively he grabbed it.
I kill you.
Barclay's vice-like grip seized the assailant's wrist and bent him backwards. The man's face was still unseen in the mist. He tried to pull away, but now his other arm was pinioned, and the pain in his knife hand was unbearable.
You are breaking my arm. You get me.
Barclay gave the man's arm a sudden wrench. The knife fell to the pavement.
My wrist. You will break it.
Yes, I'll hear that.
Barclay pulled both arms away from the man and then sent a fist crashing through the mist into the attacker's face.
Now, come on, whoever you are.
Barclay groped in the fog. This time, his gun was ready. But there was no one there. The man had fled.
I knew that voice.
He stopped short as his foot came in contact with a knife on the sidewalk. He bent over in the vapor and picked up the weapon. Police Lieutenant Brady at headquarters was at a loss.
Barclay, how can we know the answer to this if you don't? This is the second time someone has tried to kill you today.
Oh, why do they want to kill me? I don't get it. You haven't been able to identify the fingerprints on the knife, huh?
They don't show up in our print file. We're checking with the FBI. This dagger tonight was a Chinese type. Now, if you had a Chinese enemy...
Wait, Lieutenant. That's it. Chinese. I thought I recognized that voice in the fog tonight. It was a Chinese. Ah Ching. Come with me. We're going to my hotel.
But when they went to the hotel, Ah Ching had disappeared. The next day, at 6 o'clock Pacific time, Bob Barclay was on the phone with his employer in New York.
And Mr. Drake, they've learned that the fellow who was killed after shooting at me is a communist. Or was. One of the goon workers in their dock cell out here. It could be the political angle, but it still doesn't make sense. I haven't been doing any anti-Red stories lately. You'd better tell our friend in Washington what I just told you. Tonight? No, I'm going out. I'm going to Chinatown to see an old friend of mine, Tom Wong. Tom knows everything and everyone in Chinatown. Maybe he can give me a lead as to why I'm suddenly the target for a Chinese knife man.
Tom Wong was effusive when Bob Barclay entered his restaurant. After an exchange of greetings, he led the newspaper man to the bar. Long, chubby, and genial, raised his freshly poured glass in salute.
Mr. Barclay, we do not discuss your problem till we first have this libation. Chinese sage say one time, many years ago...
Look, Tom, lay off the Charlie Chan routine and let's get this parade started. Here's how.
Skull. I like that skull. Now, what do you want to know?
Barclay told of what had happened the night before.
And he said his name was Ah Ching, eh? He's a bad one, that guy. But he's not a gangster.
What is he?
Communist. He's trying hard to divide his own people here like his pals are doing in China.
Oh, another one. So that's the angle. Strange. I wonder... Oh, never mind. The thing is, how and why...
How and why what?
I'm just thinking and talking to myself, Tom.
It's bad business. Maybe you got money in the bank, eh? Better to fill your mouth with food instead of words. We have another libation and then a real Cantonese dinner. Sound good? Waiter, more libation.
Meanwhile, three persons met in the apartment in Parkside. Emil paid no attention to Rita Dupre. His wrath was directed at Ah Ching, who sat in the corner of Emil's apartment, his arm bandaged, and a piece of surgical plaster covering his nose and jaw.
It would have been better if Barclay had killed you, Ching. You know that.
I agree. Our leaders in New York are right in what they have decreed. I have failed miserably.
You wouldn't take the advice I give. You wouldn't listen.
Shut up and keep quiet while I answer this. Drugstore. Oh, it is you. It is Hickman who has been trailing Barclay tonight. What is that? So? Well. And you are sure he is alone? Wong, we do not worry about fools like Tam Wong.
Who's Tam Wong?
Will you keep quiet? Stay there. I shall get this matter settled at once. Call me in case Barclay leaves. Otherwise, wait. Another man will join you very quickly. Ah Ching? That call could mean a reprieve for you. If you had the assistance of Hickman, could you still use your knife hand?
I shall die anyway if I don't. I can use it.
Then you and Rita will have this last chance to serve your party. Perhaps our comrade, Tyler Forrest, will go to the Orient yet. Rita, you have a knowledge of knockout drops?
Knockout drops? Naturally, I have.
I shall give you some. You will go to Tam Wong's restaurant. Then here is what you will do. While Ah Ching and Hickman wait outside.
It was 2 hours later when Bob Barclay finished dinner. Tam Wong, smiling, wobbled over to the table.
You never had Cantonese food like that before, Mr. Barclay. Feel like libation now?
Tom, I couldn't eat or drink another thing.
Oh, don't say that, Mr. Barclay. And don't say you have not had your eye on that beautiful girl sitting in the booth across from you.
Well, as a matter of fact, Tom, I haven't been noticing her. She's nice. Feel like that type.
Oh, you like that type. She wants to buy champagne. She asks if you and I join her and have a little drink of vintage stuff. It's big profit, so I say yes. But to be sure you accept, she sends this little note along to you. Read it, Mr. Barclay. Then you say yes.
You're kidding, Tom.
You think so? See the way she looks expectantly at you. Then look at this note. I'm kidding?
Barclay read the note of invitation. He smiled, but there was a cold light in his eyes.
Theda Barra over there says she recognizes me, but she's read my stories and my book.
You're going to join her like she wants?
This entrance play of hers has little earmarks of a come-on. I have a hunch. I don't know if it's right, but I'm going to find out.
Happy landing.
I'm serious, Tom. And this is serious, what I'm about to ask you.
Go ahead. I'm serious.
She hasn't asked me out of the place yet. If she does, and if I give you a signal as I leave with her, can you spare one or two of your men to see if anyone's following me?
Well, I can do that, Mr. Barclay. Have some very good men in the kitchen. I keep my eyes open for signals and have boys ready. So you go on.
When Bob Barclay joined Rita Dupre, she swamped him with ardor that was supposed to have been born from reading his dispatches and his book.
I saw you sitting over there, even handsomer than your pictures. You have such expressive eyes. More champagne?
Well, I'm not a great one for the bubbly, Miss Dupre. I've had enough, thank you.
Oh, but one more. One more will matter to you. And in the days to come, it will mean so much to me in memories of this meeting.
Those are the things I should be saying, I think. We'd go ahead and pull.
As soon as I've adjusted this handbag of mine, it's such a nuisance. There. Perhaps it'll stay closed now. Permit me to pour for you, please.
All right.
Nice. There you are. There he is. Oh, how clumsy. My purse on the floor.
And everything in it on the floor.
Oh, I'm so ashamed. Would you mind?
Oh, not at all.
Exercise will do me good.
As Barclay bent over, from the side of his eye, he saw Rita Dupre place her cupped hand over his glass. And while he recovered the contents of her purse, he signaled Tom Wong. Tom hurried to the kitchen.
Here we are. I think everything's here. You better make sure.
I shall. Let me see now.
As the girl went through the actions of checking the contents of her purse, Barclay dumped his drink into a potted plant behind his chair. When Rita looked up, the glass was coming from his mouth, and he was smacking his lips.
I may be wrong, but I think that was better than the first.
You downed it so quickly, you should have... What's the matter?
I don't know. I'm very sorry. I feel as if I'm dizzy. Pardon me?
Wait. Wait, don't go. Let me help you out into the air.
I don't want to... Oh, I'm sick.
Waiter. Waiter, let me have the check, please.
Mr. Barclay has arranged for that, miss. Something wrong? You are leaving?
He's not too well.
Oh.
I'll take him outside for a while and walk him around.
Barclay put a hand up to his face and winked at Wong.
I'm sick. I gotta go now.
Don't bother, waiter. I'll be able to handle him myself. Come along. Steady.
As the girl helped Bob Barclay to the street, Tom Wong signaled through the glass panel of the kitchen door. Three young and well-muscled Chinese came to him.
Yes, sir. Get after that girl who's holding on to Mr. Barclay. Follow them without being seen. Make sure nothing happens to him.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Barclay's a very wise man, but that girl... To spoil good champagne with Mickey Finn...
Rita Dupre led the staggering Barclay away from Wong's into a dark spot in the rear of a nearby parking lot. There, Ah Ching and Hickman stepped out of the shadows and grabbed him. Rita pushed Bob into their arms.
Take care of him now, and don't fail.
She turned and ran to a car parked in the street nearby.
Come with me, Mr. Smart Man.
He's out like a light.
That's where you're wrong, big boy.
He's faking.
Stay off. Grab him.
Here, get your gun out. We're being took.
The three Chinese were on Ah Ching and Hickman before the pair could reach their weapons.
I got this one.
And we've got this fellow. It's Ah Ching.
Masters, you're breaking my arm.
You got the boys?
Yes, sir.
Here, take them back to Tom's and call the police, will you? Tell them I'll press charges and to expect a phone call from me soon. I'm going after that girl. She's trying to get that car started out there.
Rita Dupre, in her anxiety, had stalled the motor of her car, trying to get away from the scene. She got it started and took off just a few seconds before Barclay ran from the lot into the street.
Taxi! Hold it! Taxi!
You see that car turning the corner? Follow it and don't let it out of your sight. There's 10 in it for you if you don't let it get away.
It won't get away, mister. Not for a sawbuck.
Car reached a house in the Parkside district. Bob Barclay ordered his driver to stop a half a block behind him.
This'll do. Here's your money.
Thanks, mister. Thanks a lot.
Half an hour later, Bob Barclay called Lieutenant Brady at police headquarters.
Lieutenant, your men arrested Ah Ching and his partner? Good. Well, I followed the girl and know where she is now. I'll press charges if you bring some men out here. Yes. I'll be waiting for you. Come to 9, 8, 4, 6.
Brady, with two uniformed men and two others in plain clothes, arrived shortly after.
On account of the communist angle, I thought I'd better bring some FBI men with me, just in case. Where is this place?
Follow me. I'll take you to it.
Rita, in Amel's apartment, paced the floor nervously.
What can be keeping Arching? I told him to... Oh, there he is now. What kept you? Bob Barclay.
You look surprised, Rita. You fool, Rita. We've been trapped.
Hey, come back here, mister. Not so fast. Think you'd better come along with us, too.
Gestapo.
Don't get mad, mister. You can sit next to the driver. Coming, Mr. Prey?
This is your doing, Bob Barclay. What does this mean?
It means I want to know more about you, Rita. Honestly, I do. So do the police.
Let's not keep them waiting, huh?
Lieutenant Brady escorted Bob Barclay aboard the Hawaiian-bound boat on Friday. As the boat prepared to leave, he placed his hand on the newsman's shoulder.
Well, I'd better be getting ashore. I didn't think it would happen, but I finally got you safely on board.
I'm grateful, Lieutenant. But with that whole gang being held in jail, I'd have arrived safely. At least I think I would have.
I'm glad I thought of the communist angle. Brought along the FBI men on that raid. This fellow, Amel, was one of the biggest shots in the international setup. He sneaked into this country to direct the sabotage work on the coast. They have a file on him that big.
Lieutenant, I've written all that in my stories. Now tell me something I want to know. Why were they so anxious to bump me off?
Maybe they don't want you to go wherever it is you're going. The commies, I mean.
No, that can't be it. I'm just a writer, and I haven't begun to grind any axes in my stories yet. I can imagine the time may arrive when they won't want me to come back. But it's for the other... Hey, what are you looking at?
Do you see what I see?
Where?
The girl over there standing near the salon? She's the most gorgeous thing ever.
Hey, Barclay, where are you going?
I know this girl. I'll be seeing you. So long.
Bob Barclay, how good to see you. I've been reading about you in the papers. How terrible it must have been, those people trying to kill you.
Yes. The first time was at the airport. A few minutes after I left you.
What do you mean by that?
You don't know. You wouldn't know what happened to the address book I was reading on the plane, would you?
Well, of course I do. It's right here in my purse. How did you ever happen to put it into the pocket of my coat?
Huh?
I was so surprised when I came across it yesterday. Well, I knew it had to be yours. Now, I've been waiting until you came aboard. I thought you might want to use it before we sail. Here you are.
Well, thank you. You know, I'd forgotten you were sailing, too.
You've forgotten? Oh, but then you were going through so much. How could you remember a little thing like that? You're going to be shipmates now. Won't that be nice?
That evening, Bob Barclay's spirits are high. He is to meet Myra for dinner. He opens his stateroom door and takes one step. A shot. A bullet streaks past his head and smashes a lamp behind his back. He ducks back. Then cautiously looks out. On deck, there is no one in sight.
Looks as though someone doesn't want me on board this ship.
You're right, Bob Barclay. Certain persons don't want you to reach the Orient. They're afraid your news dispatches will expose their greatest plot against freedom-loving people. They want Tyler Forrest to take your place. Who is dogging your footsteps? Who is trying to kill you?
I know. Do you?
Be sure to hear our next exciting adventure. This is a copyrighted feature originating in Detroit. Created by George W. Trendle, produced by Trendle Campbell Enterprises, directed by Charles D. Livingston, and edited by Fran Stryker. The part of Bob Barclay is played by Jack McCarthy. Your announcer is J. Michael. This program is brought to you each Wednesday at this same time. Be sure to listen. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.